99.1 The Sports Animal brings you inside the fight game of the MMA.
Oh my God.
With a weekly one-hour show. Wow! In the Cage MMA Radio.
Dude, this might be a bad idea.
Hosts Vince Ferrara and Tim Loy bring you a unique perspective from inside the sport. Vince is an MMA lead commentator, cage side at many events. Tim Loy is a former MMA organization president and current matchmaker for Valor Fighting Challenge.
From the bottom of my heart, I'd like to take this chance to apologize to absolutely nobody.
Get big-time national MMA interviews, pay-per-view recaps and previews, matchmaking, predictions, strong opinions, compelling content, weekly things you'll learn, and more on In the Cage MMA Radio.
Three-minute rounds. We're underway in Knoxville.
Here's Vince Ferrara.
Welcome in the Cage MMA Radio 99.1, the Sports Animal. Great to have you with us another week of talking MMA. We are finally here. It's time for Khabib and Gaethje. We'll get to that preview coming up in our third segment. We're also going to be joined by ESPN combat sports reporter, of course, covering MMA and the UFC. Mark Raimondi will join us next segment. We'll talk about the UFC calendar and much more. And obviously back to last weekend, Ortega and the Korean Zombie to help us once again get through and use his expertise, our matchmaker co-host Mr. Tim Loy. Tim, how are you, my man?
I'm great, Vince. I'm excited to get to this fight week for sure. You know, this is the one we've been looking forward to, so I'm excited to break it all down with you.
Let's jump in to our big three stories like we do in our first segment, and we start with UFC Fight Island 6. It was T-City Brian Ortega sweeping through the Korean Zombie. It was 50-45. It was a domination. All three judges saw it the same way. Unanimous decision win for the number two ranked Brian Ortega over the Korean Zombie. We talked about it last week, wondering what Brian Ortega would look like. He changed a lot of things about him. His look, his approach, his skill set, his body even looked tighter and better with that 2-year time period. This fight has been talked about for so long, but what a featherweight statement for T-City with the domination of the Korean Zombie, Tim.
Man, it was something to behold. Just an absolute stellar performance from Ortega. Wins all the rounds easily. Not easily, but like we'll just say clearly. He mixed it up his approach. You know, it's just he didn't look like the same fighter at all. He shored up every hole that we kind of shot through him in the lead up to this. And, you know, I said last week, you know, I wanted to see Ortega win, but I was going to go with the Zombie just because I thought that, he would just overwhelm him and he glide him up and he hits harder than Max. And, man, he just couldn't hit him. Ultimately, Ortega just, man, bulldog out there and earns a title fight, man. He goes from 2 years off to putting on such a stellar performance that he's going to challenge Volkanovski next. And I love it. I'm in.
And a legit challenger to Volkanovski with his size and the reach. You talked about everything because the strike game, he hasn't dominated fights with his strike game. Oftentimes, it's been the takedowns and the wrestling and the submissions. Now he outstruck an elite striker to add to all of his other ability. He'll probably be a handful for Volkanovski.
Well, absolutely. You know, I think that leading up to this, we thought that for him to be successful, he was going to have to get the fight to the ground. He was going to have to get it into his wheelhouse, get a submission. But he didn't need to do that at all. He had that in his back pocket. But, his striking was just – it was just on point, man. And Volkanovski, you know, he's a very, very good striker too. So I think we'd get five rounds of great action there.
What's next for the Korean Zombie? Does he take a hit much at all? How do you view the future for the Korean Zombie?
I do think that he probably drops maybe a hair, maybe one ranking, but I don't think that he loses a lot of face just because more of the attention is on how good Ortega looked. It was really more like about how much Ortega had developed more so than Zombie looking bad per se. You know, a fight that I would think would be just a lot of good action would maybe be him and Calvin Kattar.
Yeah. I like that.
Give Kattar an opportunity to knock off a top ranked guy, you know?
Yeah, that's a good point. But look, those two, Kattar and Korean Zombie, you can match them up. but then they're going to be desired to pair them up with pretty much anybody else, right?
Yeah. You're 100% right there.
All right. So the Korean Zombie, dominated by Brian Ortega in the main event of UFC Fight Island 6. Co-main event, Jessica Andrade upsets Kaitlyn Chookagian. Tim, what'd you make of this upset?
You know, we thought that the size of Chookagian and the way that she uses her reach and her footwork and just her style would be an uphill battle for Andrade to overcome. Chookagian, it's like watching a tennis player when she's out there. She's always, you know, kind of grunting along with every strike she throws. And sometimes that, you know, leads the judges to favor her, and she knows how to win decisions. But Andrade just wasn't having any of it. She got the big takedown, a big slam. That was one thing that I didn't know that she'd be able to get in there and do, and she obviously did. She had a huge quickness and speed advantage that she used, and then lands the crippling body shot that just, she felt it.
She grabbed her midsection and then one more shot and it put her down, and that was the end of it. What else stood out to you on the card, Tim?
You know, I thought it was a good win for Jim Crute. You know, he's always getting guys out of there and then in spectacular fashion. You kind of forget about him until you see him, and then you're like, oh man, yeah, Jim Crute kid, he's pretty good. Another good win there. Jonathan Martinez knocks off Thomas Almeida, who is returning from a couple years off, and that's a little bit of an upset there for Martinez. Good win. And then we saw Guram Kutaladze with an upset over former KSW champ Matush Gamrot, and that was a really good fight. That was maybe fight of the night, leading up into the main card.
Junyoung Park, the Iron Turtle, one of the better nicknames going. How about 286 strikes, Tim? All of them on the ground.
Yeah.
A record in the middleweight division.
You want to know what's like really crazy about that? Not to get too off into like gambling land talk here, but on DraftKings, only 20 or no, maybe 10. I think like only 10 of those 200 and something were graded as significant.
Wow.
So if you had him, you're like, oh wow, he's got 200 and something strikes, I'm crushing it. But no, they only deemed like 10 of them to be significant over three rounds. So that's kind of wild, you know. It's what's more wild is like as dominant as he was that he wasn't able to finish. I didn't like that.
Saeed Nurmagomedov, man, quick work, 51 seconds over Mark Striegel. This kid is talented. He's not related to Khabib, but he's worked out with Khabib before. But man, he looks pretty good.
Yeah, man. You know, that flyweight division is kind of always, needing that fresh breath. So he could be that guy.
Winners and losers for our number two in our big three stories. Tim, we'll start with you. Give me your winner from Fight Island 6.
Yeah, you know, I'm going to go with Jessica Andrade in the co-main event. Knocks out Kaitlyn Chookagian in the first round, a big body shot, moves up to 125. There's a lot of doubters, us included, as to whether or not she would be relevant there in that division. And not only is she relevant, but she just leapfrogs up the rankings and is already in title talks.
It's a good choice. I'm going to go with T-City Brian Ortega. We certainly wondered, a lot of people did, what he would look like after that two-year layoff. And he was better than ever. And it really enhanced a lot of aspects of his game, even better than he was an elite fighter before. And now he came back and worked on his weaknesses. And now he gets a title fight, winning the main event in a dominant fashion, getting a title fight. That's winning to me. So
oh, yeah, 100%.
Going with T-City. So I will start with the loser, and I'll go with Matush Gamrot. You mentioned him being an undefeated KSW two-division champ, favorite on the card. That's one of those where it looks like the UFC wants him to kind of move up the rankings and make an impact, and losing to Kutaladze the way he did. Granted, it was a split decision loss, but still a loss in the first one he's tagged with. Obviously slows the growth down, so I'll go with Gamrot.
I'm gonna go with Thomas Almeida, you know, who has fallen so far over the last 2 years. At one point, undefeated, 20-0, maybe better than that, and challenging Cody Garbrandt for the title in a main event of a pay per view. You know, he's really been up there at the peak, and losing in the opener of the main card to Jonathan Martinez. Especially just as wide as he did. He just never really got out there and got going. It's a pretty tough loss for him, and it's three in a row now for the former undefeated Almeida.
Our third in our big three stories is a look at the rest of the 2020 MMA calendar. We've been looking forward to this Khabib Gaethje fight, but what's left after that in 2020? Tim, you look at October 31st, the main event of Vegas 12 is Uriah Hall versus Anderson Silva. Then after that, November 7th, it's Vegas 13. Thiago Santos and Glover Teixeira. Then UFC 255, Davison Figueroa against Cody Garbrandt in a title fight in the main event, and Valentina Shevchenko against Jennifer Maya in another title fight. That's November 21st. Jonathan Pierce, VFC alum, will be on that card, by the way. Then we just heard they're targeting December 5th show for OSP against Jamahal Hill in a light heavyweight bout. And then UFC 256, December 12th, Amanda Nunes versus Megan Anderson in a title fight. I'm sure there'll be a lot more and more interesting fights that'll be added on. But what are your thoughts on the rest of the 2020 UFC calendar?
Well, you know, I think the show this weekend is our pinnacle. So it's going to be really hard to match that kind of hype on any of these shows, but I'm still excited for a few of them. I think, you know, your fight night cards in between, you know, there's some exciting main events like the Santos Teixeira fight, which has been rebooked. You know, I don't know how excited I am for Uriah Hall and Anderson Silva on Halloween night, but, you know, getting up to that November 21st card, the next numbered UFC card, you know, 255, the next pay-per-view, I'm excited for that. Figueredo and Garbrandt, I'm in on that. You know, I think that's going to be good. I think it's going to be fun. I think Shevchenko Maya is, you know, pretty lopsided. But now with the talk of Andrade kind of emerging, I think everybody's just kind of assuming Shevchenko will get past Maya, and that'll be the next thing we see. As for December, man, I don't know. You know, Nunez and Anderson, that's a hard pay-per-view headliner to sell. So I expect at least one more blockbuster added to that.
If Connor and Poirier finally figure this thing out with the UFC, is there a chance we get that in 2020, or is that more likely 2021?
You know, if you'd asked me that a couple weeks ago, I'd say it'd probably be more like next year. But, you know, just kind of talking about the fight that we just, the card that we ended that one with, that December 12th, 256 card, UFC 256 card, headlined by Nunez and Anderson. To me, that's a weak show to end the year on. And right now, it could really use a boost. And it sounds like a good spot to me for it.
Let's do it. All right. That's Tim Loy. I'm Vince Ferrar here on In the Cage MMA Radio. We talk UFC and UFC 254 with ESPN MMA combat sports reporter Mark Raimondi. He joins us next on In the Cage MMA Radio on 99.1 The Sports.
Now it's time for In the Cage MMA Radio's weekly marquee interview, letting you hear from the personalities inside the sport. In the Cage.
Back here on In the Cage MMA Radio, 99.1 Sports. Animal Tim Loy will rejoin us in just a little bit. It's interview segment time, and we're excited to be joined by combat sports reporter for ESPN. He is on Twitter at Mark, M-A-R-C underscore Raimondi, R-A-I-M-O-N-D-I. He is Mark Raimondi, who joined us on the show. Hey, Mark, Vince Ferrara here in Knoxville and In the Cage MMA Radio. How you doing, Mark?
What's up, Vince? How are you?
Man, good. Let's get to UFC 254. But before we talk about the main event, the fight itself and how it plays out, explain and verbalize for our audience the legacy stakes between Khabib and Gaethje in this fight.
Wow. So Khabib Nurmagomedov, of course, is 28-0. He's never lost in MMA. He is the UFC lightweight champion. This will be, he's looking at trying to complete his third successful title defense, which would tie him for the most ever in the lightweight division. So for him, it is incredibly meaningful because it's another contender for him to get past. Gaethje is the interim champion right now. Of course, Khabib is the undisputed champion. And it may be, I mean, it's arguably his toughest test yet as far as styles go. Gaethje is an excellent striker. He's a very hard guy to take down and hold down. And of course, that's Khabib's game, trying to take you down and hold you down. But Khabib is, many believe, either the pound-for-pound king right now or number two behind Jon Jones. He's right there. And to beat Gaethje and to continue this undefeated streak, it will only add to his legacy going into possibly a chance to go 30-0, which would be an incredible accomplishment in MMA. So that's on the line. Trying to go 30-0 is on the line, which was, of course, one of the dreams that he and his father, his late father, Abdulmanap, had for him to go 30-0. And there are big fights on the horizon. There's the George St. Pierre fight, possibly, that I know that both he and GSP want. So a lot of it is riding on Khabib this time. And for Gaethje, I would say not as much as riding on it because he's not the one protecting his undefeated streak. But if he wins this fight, it changes his legacy, because until now, Vince, I would say that Gaethje is thought of kind of like a wild man, as kind of like a brawler, even though he has polished up that technique and those tactics over the last few fights. He still has that reputation. And if he were to beat Khabib Nurmagomedov, the first person to ever do that, it would cement his own legacy as a possible future Hall of Famer. So, I mean, it's a huge fight. I mean, there's no doubt. It's a massive fight.
This obviously is suffocating dominant wrestler versus violent striker and great takedown defense, as you mentioned. But you wrote about how the takedowns are weighed in MMA scoring. It's something that we talk about on our levels, on the regional level. And obviously, everyone is always wondering what consists of a takedown, how much credit do you get for it, things like that. You wrote about that and asked a lot of people about it. What did you learn most about how that aspect might be applied potentially in this fight?
It's very interesting because Khabib and Gaethje, neither one of them want to go to the judges. There's no doubt. Neither one of them really wants to put that responsibility into the judges' hands. They want to get the finish. And Gaethje hasn't gone to the judges. He hasn't gone to a decision in 6 years. And he's made it well known that he would much rather knock someone out or even get knocked out himself than go to the judges. But the fact remains that this is a very evenly matched fight. And I could very well see it going the full five because of the styles that are there. Gaethje's a hard guy to finish, especially on the ground. And Khabib has never lost, let alone been finished. So something has to give, right? Something has to give. And the reason why I was interested in doing the story now is because there's so much division and polarization about in rounds, how much the takedown worth compared to how much is striking worth. And it was illuminating speaking to judges about this, because judges very rarely do interviews. So I was very grateful for California State Athletic Commission Executive Officer Andy Foster to grant me that permission to speak to several of the top judges in the sport, you know, guys who are doing UFC title fights every week, basically. And it was very illuminating to speak with them because they don't usually get heard from. And they did a good job of breaking it down where, you know, a takedown is not every takedown is created equally. And it really is about what you do after the takedown happens. Takedown is kind of like a jab almost. It's not a very damaging blow, but it does dictate something. But it's really what you do after that gets to decide how much you do weigh the takedown. And that's going to be worth watching on Saturday, I really do think, because guess what? Khabib is going to go for takedowns. And Gaethje is going to try to stop them. And we could be seeing rounds where they're very close and Khabib is on top, maybe not doing a whole lot of damage, and Gaethje's doing damage on the feet. So how do they weigh that? How do they decide which is, you know, enough to win the round? Is it the blow? Is it the strikes? Is it the damage? Is it the takedowns? So it was good. And I mean, I think the main thing that judges want to get across that they feel like people just don't understand at this point is the tiered system, the stacked system. It's effective striking and grappling, and the far majority of rounds get dictated on effective striking and grappling. Only if that's equal do you then move on to effective aggression. And then only if that and effective striking and grappling is equal do you move on to control. So they hate the word control, judges and regulators, because people throw that around as, well, that person had control, they won the round. Like, that doesn't even get looked at unless everything else is equal. And ABC Rules and Regulations Committee Chairperson Sean Wheelock told me that only about 1% of rounds is actually decided by control. So it's really just worth knowing that as a fan, as a media member, as a coach, as a broadcaster, as a fighter, that those are the criteria, and it's not everything gets weighed equally. It's a stacked system.
Great points. Mark Grimondi from ESPN joining us here. You can find his article. He talked to judges, fighters, coaches, broadcasters on that story. Great perspective on ESPN.com. Oftentimes in football, Mark, you know this, when there's a strength matchup, like in this case with Khabib's takedowns versus Gaethje's takedown defense, and in football, maybe one team's offense versus another team's defense, Alabama, Georgia going into that game. But then another area oftentimes ends up being the real difference. Something outside of the strength versus strength of those two fighters. If there's another area that you think would be important in the outcome of this fight, what would it be?
Ooh, wow, that's a good question. It's hard to say. I mean, look, it's a 5-round fight, so cardio is going to be a very, very big factor in this fight. And we've never really seen either guy get tired on that level. But we have seen them, I guess, weaken in some fights as the fights grow on. I mean, that's only natural, right? When you're fighting at that level against the best competition in the world, you can't continue at the same pace for so long. So you saw, you know, Gaethje get knocked out by Eddie Alvarez and Dustin Poirier late in those fights. And you've seen Khabib, while he's never lost, he lost the third round to Conor McGregor after winning the first and second, because you just can't continue on that pace for so long. So I think it's going to be so evenly matched that cardio will definitely play a part. Can Khabib continue to take Gaethje down over and over in the fourth and fifth rounds? Can Gaethje deal with that kind of pressure and wrestling and grappling and submission attempts and ground and pound to survive until the late rounds, where he could have a chance against possibly a diminished Khabib? I think that's going to play a big factor, perhaps even as much as just the skill for skill.
What do you like in the fight and why?
Man, putting me on the spot. I mean, you can't pick against Khabib. I'm a firm believer in that. If you have a guy who's undefeated, who's never lost, and really he's rarely ever even lost rounds. Yeah. So it's hard to pick against someone like that. What I will say is that Justin Gaethje on paper has the best chance, has the best style to deal with Khabib, because he does have a wrestling background. He's a very hard guy to take down. He's a hard guy to hold down. And when he's on the feet, he's as dangerous as anyone in the sport. And he's only gotten better on the feet over the last few fights as far as technique and tactics go. The way that he dismantled Tony Ferguson really had to be eye-opening for people to see where he is. He's not the same guy who lost to Poirier and lost to Eddie Alvarez. He's a different guy. He's better. He has evolved. And I'm just excited for the fight to see how far he has evolved. But again, Khabib, the wrestling, the relentlessness, the pace, the skill, and really, the wrestling can also give fits to Gaethje as far as the stand-up goes, because that's how Khabib dropped Conor McGregor, right? Because McGregor was so preoccupied with the fact that Khabib was going to shoot, and he was going to shoot, everyone knows he's going to shoot, that he left his guard down and Khabib cracked him with an overhand right. So Khabib doesn't just beat people with his wrestling. His wrestling actually weakens them on the feet because they're so preoccupied with that takedown. And even Gaethje said, if he gets me against the fence, I'm in trouble. It's gonna be a tough night. So I'm picking Khabib, but if Gaethje were to somehow win this fight, I would not be shocked. It would not be one of those things where I'm like, wow, I can't believe that. My jaw would not be hitting the floor. I know he has a chance in this fight. There's no doubt.
It sets up so much fun for fans when there's a dominant champion, but then the underdog is so live because of his one punch knockout ability, just having that skill set. I think from an entertainment standpoint, it's as good as it gets. Co-main event, just real quick, Whitaker, Cannonier, the rest of the card. What else jumps out to you about the rest of UFC 254?
Well, I feel like Whitaker, Cannonier is actually not getting as much love as it could. And it's a really big fight. It could decide the winner. The winner could be the one who faces Israel Adesanya next for the UFC middleweight title. Mm-hmm. So it's the stakes are very high for this fight, and it's a chance for Whitaker to, you know, once again prove that he's among the elite, the top two, top three middleweights in the world. And for Cannonier, it's a chance to show that he is in that conversation, that he can break into that conversation and get that title shot against Adesanya. And another fight that I want to quickly touch on is we're finally going to see this fight between Magomed Ankalaev and Ian Kutalaba, one from February that ended extremely controversially when Kutalaba was almost playing possum and referee Kevin McDonald thought that he was out on his feet and he called it a TKO. And since then, the UFC has been trying to put this fight together since February. It's been 9 months. Put together the rematch to have a fair and competitive rematch. And it's fallen apart, I think, at least three times, including a pandemic related fallout. And then since then, there were positive COVID tests and there were injuries. And it's just been a mess trying to get this fight to happen. And it's a key fight because both of them are excellent prospects in the light heavyweight division. And it's finally, hopefully, going to happen on Saturday. I won't say for sure until they're actually in the cage, Vince, but yeah. I think we're going to see it this time finally.
Mark Ramondi, combat sports reporter for ESPN at Mark, M-A-R-C underscore Ramondi, R-A-I-M-O-N-D-I. Follow him on Twitter, and then make sure you watch UFC 254 this Saturday, prelims on ESPN Plus, and then, of course, on pay-per-view afterwards. We'll have a full review next week. Mark, thank you so much. I didn't mean to keep you this long, but you're so interesting and great stuff to talk about. So really appreciate the time, and hopefully we'll catch up with you down the road.
I'm very long-winded, Vince, so don't apologize. That's 100% on me.
You are not alone in the broadcasting industry with that. We're always working on that, but you are fantastic. Thanks, Mark.
Thanks, man.
That is Mark Ramondi from ESPN. We will have the full preview of UFC 254. Tim Loy rejoins us next on In the Cage MMA Radio 99.1, the Sports Hannity.
What big events are coming up in MMA?
Well, right now, Vince and Tim have the answers.
This is the pay-per-view and MMA show preview on In the Cage MMA Radio.
Back here on In the Cage MMA Radio 99.1, the Sports Animal. Vince Ferrar alongside Tim Loy. It's our weekly 1 hour MMA show, which we podcast shortly after the show. You can get that podcast anywhere you get your podcast, whether it's Apple, iTunes, or Google, or Spotify, or anywhere else. Just search for In the Cage MMA Radio. Make sure you listen, you subscribe, you rate it, and you share it with your friends and other MMA fight fans, and tell them about 1 hour MMA radio show here in Knoxville, Tennessee. And then, of course, you can follow us on social media. Tim is on Facebook at Tim Loy, and then I'm on Twitter at Vince Sports. Want to be a part of the show in any way, hit us up, and we'll take your feedback, questions, suggestions for interviews, topics, things like that. And we'll get those on the show. If you want to be a sponsor on the show, we will certainly make a positive impact on your business. So contact us. You can always get those podcasts as well. Do you want to mention 991thesportsanimal.com? Go to the audio tab or the show tab and look for In the Cage MMA Radio there. And then you can get all of our archive shows there as well. So another option for you. And we're always streaming on our website or the free WNML mobile app. So you can take us with you wherever you happen to be. All right, let's jump in. It's obviously the long-awaited fight of the year. Would you say, Tim, is that a fair label, fight of 2020?
Yeah, man, we've been talking about this since the summer. It feels like it's finally here. We've been wanting to talk about it, and now we get to it's this is our 2020 apex. Hopefully nothing jacked up happened.
Yes, pray emoji for that, for sure. Yeah. So as we talked about it with Mark Ramondi in the last segment, there's so much legacy that's on the line here, especially for Habib and being undefeated and wanting to go down as the most dominant champion in UFC history. The opportunity for Gaethje to knock off a guy on that platform right now. From that standpoint, Tim, what do you think of the big picture of what this means for the sport when this goes down on Saturday?
You know, given the circumstances of the 2020 year, I think it's going to just have a tremendous amount of eyes on it. You know, Khabib is, seen as the best fighter in the world probably right now, you know, whether you say him or Jon Jones or whatever, you know, to many worldwide, Khabib's seen as that guy. And Gaethje has more than earned his shot here, knocking off the top contenders in violent fashion, and just may have, he's got the style that leaves everybody kind of saying, what if, you know, what if Gaethje can land? What if he can stop the takedowns, you know? So there is a fair amount of, confidence in a lot of people on the underdog here in Justin Gaethje. So that's what they want. You know, you want a world title fight between two guys that can both feasibly get the win, and you don't really know who to call. It's really tough for me.
Significant strikes per minute. Gaethje, 7.74. That's the highest in UFC lightweight history. And then Habib is 4.41. Striking accuracy. Habib 49%, Gaethje 59%. Takedowns per 15 minutes. Habib 5.35. That's the eighth highest in UFC history. I'm surprised it's not higher than that. And then Gaethje 0. He's never on the mat, one way or another. And then the takedown defense, 80% for Gaethje and Habib 84%. When people do technically get the takedown against Gaethje, he's right back up and isn't on his back. That kind of strength versus strength is one of the many fascinating parts of this fight.
100%. Whenever you look at both guys' weaknesses and both guys' strengths, not that either guy has really a whole lot of weaknesses, but their strengths play right into each other. You know, is Khabib going to be able to land this multitude of takedowns on a guy that doesn't get taken down? You know, is Gaethje going to be able to land these big knockout shots on a guy that doesn't get knocked out? I mean, I don't know. Anybody that acts like they really know what's going to happen is out of their mind, because this is one of those fights you just really don't know. I really, you know, when it comes down to it, I'm probably going to, I'm going to go with Gaethje, because that's what I want to see happen, I think, you know, but I don't say it with any real, I don't say it with any real confidence. You know, I'm not going to be like, I told you so next week if Gaethje wins. I'll be like, heck yeah, Gaethje won. It was an awesome fight, you know, but yeah, I don't have any sort of confidence in picking either side.
Well, it's a very noble thing to say and stance to take, Tim. I'll take Khabib, and then I'll brag about it next week and say, see, I told you.
Right. I'm on a bad streak right now, though. So, I probably just cursed Justin Gaethje, and I hope not, man. I hope he pulls it off. But Khabib, you know, dealing with the loss of his father, which is also his coach, his mentor, just a couple months ago, you know, who knows how that affects him? Who knows if that – it could be a motivating factor, and we see the best Khabib ever. It could be – a distraction and something that is taken away from his training that he's used to, and we may see not the best Khabib. Who knows?
Here's the thing, and you're right, that could certainly be a factor. You just never know with that kind of stuff. Everybody handles it different, compartmentalizes sometimes, mm-hmm. and even motivates him. But I worry that because Gaethje hasn't been on his back, what happens when that happens in this fight? And that's what worries me about Gaethje. Yes, he's got an unbelievable takedown defense, but nobody is better than Khabib.
No.
And then smothering you as well when you're there. First time that happens, I worry about what Gaethje's going to be able to do in that situation.
I think to me, it's kind of one of those things where, you know, I think that it's going to be super hard to put Gaethje away if Khabib is able to land these takedowns. And then you figure it's a 5-round fight, so I get 5 chances most likely to start the fight standing and land one of those blows. You know, that's what I'm kind of hoping for anyway. I don't know that it's going to happen, but I think he's going to have 5 opportunities to make it happen.
So you're going with Gaethje. I'm going with Khabib in the main event. Can't wait for it. And I mentioned this with Mark. This is perfect from an entertainment, a fan standpoint. You got a dominant champion that's undefeated, right? I think there's a fair amount of fans that would like to see Khabib lose. He didn't have the most entertaining style. He just smothers people. So the challenger is exciting, is a fan favorite, and he's dangerous because of his one strike knockout ability. When the underdog has that kind of live chance, I think from the fight fan standpoint, this is just the perfect mix of a main event.
100%, you know, and another thing about Gaethje is just that grit, that determination. Gaethje's been down before in fights. We've seen him losing fights before, but he's always live. He's always, not saying always, but many, many a times has he come back from the brink of defeat to pull off those wins. He's not going to quit. He's not going to, you know, even if he's down 3-0 going to the fourth, he still believes he's going to come back and pull off the finish.
Tim Loy, Vince Ferrara here on In the Cage MMA Radio. By the way, I do want to mention this. You guys be alert on this. This is a special early start time for this Saturday for UFC 254. I know a lot of you typically will plan for your Saturday nights to have the UFC as part of it, and that's great. But this is going to be a morning and afternoon card and show. The prelims, UFC early prelims, going to start at 10:30 on the ESPN Plus app. And then the prelim card will be on ESPN Plus at noon. And then the pay-per-view main card will start at 2 p.m. So 10:30, noon, and 2 p.m. for the UFC. So this bad boy's going to be over mid to late afternoon, Tim.
Well, I guess I like the idea of not having to stay up into the wee hours of the night to see how this goes. But, man, is this going to throw my routine off on a Saturday afternoon or what?
Yeah. Yeah, in competition with college football, for sure. So we'll see. So just FYI on those start times, 10:30, noon, and 2 p.m. for 254 this weekend. All right, co-main event. Mark Raimondi mentioned it. You know, probably not getting enough attention. It's a 1-2 in the middleweight division. Winner almost certainly is going to get Adesanya. That's Robert Whittaker against Jared Cannonier. Whittaker's already lost to Israel. Cannonier has impressed Israel to where he's complimenting him on Twitter. What do you think of this matchup?
You know, it could main event one of these fight night cards, to tell you the truth. It's certainly a great co-main event here. This is another one that's really hard for me to call, man. I feel like the obvious choice is Robert Whittaker. You know, I feel like that's the choice that you'd be like, well, man, it's a former world champion, and he kind of reigned supreme for quite a while. You know, and Jerry Cannonier, like, that's not a household name. And I know he's got some wins over some tough guys, and I know he hits hard, and I know he's more athletic, but it's Robert Whittaker, man. I don't know. I'm on the fence on it now. Just Whittaker maybe has ran his course, I'm afraid. And you look back at some of those title fight wins that he had at the time, they felt like they were good, but like, none of those guys that he beat are really relevant players in the division anymore, you know? So, man, I'm on the fence. I'm going to go Whittaker, but again, with trepidation. I would not be surprised if Cannonier just knocks him out.
Yeah, I'm with you. Not with great conviction or confidence. I'm going with Robert Whittaker. You know, until injuries really slowed him down, he was one of my favorite fighters in all the UFC. Him doing what he's done to Yoel Romero, I don't take that away from him because Romero is not an elite fighter anymore. So I still think he's got tremendous skill set, IQ in the octagon. And look, he was somewhat competitive against Adesanya for a little bit, and that's an elite fighter and the champion. So I'm still a little bit unsure on Cannonier's total upside. So I'll go with a little bit more to the known commodity in Robert Whittaker.
Yeah, I think it's the play for now until proven otherwise.
Yeah. So rest of the card real quick, but we'll just run through them. Number 7, Alexander Volkov against number 10, Walt Harris. Just a quick thought on that.
Man, it's another one that's very interesting. You know, Walt Harris is a guy that is very athletic, very explosive. In the first 2 or 3 minutes is going to be absolute torture probably for Alexander Volkov. But Walt Harris empties that gas tank, then he becomes a completely different fighter in the second half of the fight. Alexander Volkov, you know, 6'10" or something crazy. I mean, he's six, or at least 6'8". I mean, he's really big guy, really good jab, good long reach, more well-rounded. I got Volkov.
7-10 in a heavyweight bout there at UFC 254. I think they've moved up the Jacob Molkan Phil Hawes fight from the prelims into the main card. Also, you got number 5, Lauren Murphy against Lilia Shekharova in a women's flyweight bout. And number 11, Magomed Ankalaev against Ian Kudalaba in a light heavyweight bout. We talked about this with Mark Raimondi as well. They've been trying to have this fight or the reset to it forever. Yeah. You're going to stay away from actually putting any money on the line on this one until it actually happens, right?
Yeah, I'll believe it when I see it, man. They've been teasing us for this for a minute. And it's always like the first fight on the main card.
Right.
That's where it's always set, you know. Yeah. So we'll see, man. Maybe that's why they've got 6 fights on the main card here, because they know that something that we don't, you know. But, yeah, man, other than that, Lauren Murphy, you know, she gets a short notice replacement here. I know that Shakharova is like the first Uzbekistan female to ever fight in the UFC. So, you know, that's kind of, an accolade there. And then she's in tough, though. Lauren Murphy's very good. She was originally supposed to fight Cynthia Calvillo, which would have really kind of topped off this pay-per-view, you know.
Yeah. And then you got some named fighters on the undercard as well. You got another heavyweight bout, 2 guys that have been around for a while. You talk about length, Stefan Struve against Tai Tuivasa, Alex Oliveira in a welterweight bout. You got Sam Alvey in a light heavyweight bout. There's some names on the rest of the prelims.
Yeah, Stefan Struve, Tai Tuivasa, man. That could be 2 guys fighting for their jobs. You know, I think Tuivasa's got a lot of power and could probably get Struve out of there if he keeps it standing. Brazilian cowboy Alex Oliveira, always entertaining, and see him down here on the undercard. You know it's a stacked card. My pick on the undercard for Fight of the Night, though, Nathaniel Wood, Casey Kinney. My guy, Casey Kinney, he's back. He's just fought like 3 weeks ago, you know. Man, he's on a roll, and a win over a good English prospect in Nathaniel Wood will surely get him in the rankings.
And Tim, the UFC lists that as a catch weight bout. That's something that the regional organizations do. The UFC doesn't do much of that. They usually want some kind of division stakes.
Very rare. Yeah, I'm a little surprised at that. I don't know if it's a situation where one guy, it's just been changed to that because a guy is heavy right now, or if it was originally set at that or what.
Yeah, I guess at this point, late in the game, you either change that or you lose the fight.
Yeah, and they probably out at that point.
Absolutely. That's Tim Loy. I'm Vince Ferrara. The MMA Lightning Round presented by Knoxville Martial Arts Academy is next, including a look at Bellator 249 last week and Dana White's Contender Series coming back. All that is next on In the Cage MMA Radio 99.1, the Sports.
There's still a lot of MMA to tell you about and react to. Since we're short on time, we'll have to make it quick, but we promise it'll be good. Here's the MMA Lightning Round on In the Cage MMA Radio.
Welcome back to In the Cage MMA Radio 99.1, the Sports Animal. He is Tim Loy. I am Vince Ferrara. The MMA Lightning Round each week is powered by KMAA. They offer classes for children in self-defense, Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu, MMA, personal training, kickboxing, yoga, and martial arts. From the in-depth training at KMAA, many of the students have catapulted themselves into professional careers in the UFC, Bellator, and Invicta fighting promotions. They'll help you achieve your goals. Call them at 865-771-9775 or visit their website at knoxmma.com. Located at 4201 Martin Mill Pike in Knoxville. Appreciate Knoxville Martial Arts Academy for being a sponsor here on In the Cage MMA Radio. Reminder, 991thesportsanimal.com. You get all our archived shows from this show tonight that'll be podcasted shortly after we wrap things up to anything, all of our shows that we have done this year. And we appreciate your support in our growth throughout this entire year. And then also WNML mobile app will allow you to be able to listen to our show every Thursday night from 8 until 9, free of charge from wherever you are at. All right, Tim, real quick, let's hit on Valor Fighting Challenge calendar. November and December shows coming up.
Yeah, man, we've got two more shows to go to round out 2020. We got November the 6th. It is Valor 75, and that's going to be four title fights on that card. And then we round it out with our all Muay Thai show. It's all striking on December the 4th, and that's Valor 76. We got 2 8-man tournaments that night for some championship straps on the line.
Man, those tournaments are always a lot of fun. Glad you guys are doing that. Also, Dana White Contender Series is coming back November 4th. They have 3 shows, I think, already kind of scheduled out with a main event. They ran through them quickly and successfully in the last season, and now they're back at it.
Yeah, you know, it seems like that's going to be a staple for, you know, feeding the UFC that next level of talent and finding guys that can step up on short notice.
And then we saw Bellator 249 last week, Cyborg Blenko. First, the main event, another dominant performance by Cyborg, right?
Yeah, she ended up at 12-1 by the time that thing went off, and she looked every bit of it. Just a very dominant performance over an overmatched Blenko. I don't know what's next for Cyborg. They're going to have to get somebody in there for her.
Yeah, Cyborg in Bellator is kind of like Nunes in the UFC. A massive gap there. And then our guy Logan Neal, Valor Fighting Challenge alum, got an opportunity as he lost in the first round via Kimura to Aviv Ghilazi in 3:22 of the first round. What did you see from Logan Neal in that fight?
Hey, man, you know, he gave a good accounting of himself. He lasted longer than any of the other opponents that Ghazali has had up to date, getting about 3.5 minutes into the first round before succumbing to submission. But, you know, held his own on the feet, had knocked him down at one point, showed some good cage IQ by not following him down to the mat, called him back up to his feet, landed some good leg kicks, but ultimately wasn't able to stop the inevitable takedown, succumb to submission. But a good experience for Logan. He's in good spirits, and he showed that he can get up there on the big stage.
All right. I know what you'll be doing Saturday morning and afternoon, early prelims at 10:30 on ESPN Plus, and then on the pay-per-view. First prelims at 10:30, second one at noon, and then the main card at 2 p.m. Tim, appreciate you. Always great to do the show with you, my man, and we'll recap it next week.
My pleasure as always, Vince. Thanks.
Thanks, Tim. And we'll have Mark Raimondi join us again next week on the show as we'll talk more UFC and MMA here on In the Cage MMA Radio on 99.1 The Sports Animal. I'm Vince Ferrara. Good night, everybody.
Thanks for listening to In the Cage MMA Radio as Vince and Tim bring you inside the fight game of MMA with this unique weekly one-hour show. Join us again next Wednesday night, 8 to 9 on 99.1, The Sports Animal.